At noon on KSFR now looks at the top local news headlines for this Friday, August 23rd. Santa Fe Mayor David Koss is challenging U.S. Postal Service plans to move the city's main post office from the Joseph Montoya Federal Building to the San Busco Center. Last month, the Postal Service informed the city of those plans and gave the mayor 30 days to respond. Initially, Koss said he would not object as the move would still keep the post office in a downtown location. Now, however, Koss is formally appealing the Postal Service's plan, saying they did not provide a much-needed and promised public forum on the matter. More than two dozen state Republican lawmakers have vowed to go to New Mexico's Supreme Court to stop Doña Ana County from issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. County Clerk Lynn Ellens, an attorney, began doing so on Wednesday, asserting the legality of the action under equal protection provisions of the state constitution. Republican State Senator William Scherer of Farmington, a longtime foe of marriage equality, says the county clerk cannot make law. Scherer and other GOP lawmakers are expected to file a suit within the next few days. Meanwhile, New Mexico's Supreme Court has ruled that a wedding photographer who refused to provide services to a same-sex couple violated the state's Human Rights Act. In 2006, the co-owner of Elaine Photography in Albuquerque refused to photograph Vanessa Willock and her partner's ceremony, saying that doing so would violate her religious beliefs. The State Human Rights Commission found the company guilty of discrimination based on sexual orientation, and in 2012 that decision was affirmed by the New Mexico Court of Appeals. Santa Clara Pueblo individuals deemed sex offenders will now be registered in accordance with law by state and local agencies. The Pueblo has a new agreement with the New Mexico Department of Public Safety and sheriff departments in both Rio Arriba and Santa Fe counties. Convicted sex offenders living, working, or attending school in those counties within the Pueblo's boundaries will be listed on New Mexico's publicly searchable database. Those failing to register will be subject to criminal charges under Santa Clara Pueblo law and may also face federal charges. The U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division will join the Mexican consulate in Albuquerque to sponsor Labor Rights Week. On Monday, a Fair Labor Standards Act presentation at the consulate will distribute compliance assistance materials to employers and also answer questions and take complaints. A just-released UNM study indicates that a large percentage of Mexican nationals here in our state, both undocumented and those here legally, are routinely subjected to wage theft and other abuses. Congressman Ben Ray Luan puts a new technological spin on town halls tomorrow as he holds the 3rd Congressional District's first district-wide video forum. Participants will gather at 1 p.m. at facilities in six separate locations: Santa Fe, Rio Rancho, Las Vegas, Farmington, Gallup, and Tucumcari. The topic will be hunger and poverty issues and the best practices for remedy. Santa Fe's participation will be conducted at the Santa Fe Community College campus. The Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority has now dropped its drought watch and the associated heavy fines imposed for wasting water. The authority's board says customers heeded conservation calls and reduced consumption by more than 600 million gallons this year over last. Recent monsoonal rains in Albuquerque made last month the ninth wettest July on record. A popular attraction at our nearby Bandelier National Monument partially reopens to visitors next week. The Alcove House is an ancestral kiva located in a niche high above Frijoles Canyon and reached by an extensive series of ladders. The ascent route and cave was found to be unstable and has been closed for repairs throughout the summer months. On Monday, park visitors will once again be able to scale the ladders, though the kiva itself remains closed for further stabilization work. The Genoveva Chavez Community Center is closing tomorrow for annual maintenance. Most of the facility will reopen on Tuesday, September 3rd. The center's basketball gymnasium and track are scheduled to reopen Saturday, September 7th. During the closure, GCCC memberships will be honored at the Fort Marcy Complex and the Salvador Perez Pool. And weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny skies today with highs in the low 80s and just a 10% chance for an isolated late-day shower. Precipitation probabilities increase to 30% tomorrow, with highs near 80 degrees. And then showers less likely Sunday, highs again in the low 80s. Overnight lows throughout the period in the mid-50s. Current Santa Fe temperature is 76 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. Governor Martinez this week announced creation of a new position in state government to help New Mexicans cope with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. It's part of a broader initiative to address the matter and also ease the burden on caregivers. Joining us now to talk more about this is Miles Copeland, Department Secretary of Aging and Long-Term Services. Miles, tell us about this new outreach.
It's actually an outcome from about a year and a half worth of work. Back in 2012, there was a memorial passed in the House of Representatives that created a state Alzheimer's task force that was charged with coming up with a state plan for how to deal with Alzheimer's disease. We've got 31,000 folks that have the disease here in New Mexico, and they're cared for by 105,000 unpaid caregivers, that's friends and family. And because age is your greatest risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, and on a national scale, we've got 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 every day, it's set to rapidly expand so that 31,000 becomes 43,000 by 2025. And there's a great sense of urgency that the caregivers need to be supported. We've got to get better about diagnosis and about healthcare system capacity, about workforce development to make sure that we've got enough folks to take care of our loved ones that have Alzheimer's disease and other dementia. And in terms of research, too, that we're leveraging our great resources here in the state, Los Alamos, Sandia, the great medical school that we have at UNM, and all of our other schools, too, to make sure that we're getting the most out of our research here. And so what this new position will do, without expanding state government at all, because it's just converting an existing position, is to make sure that all of the different folks who have participated throughout this Alzheimer's task force process will remain engaged. We're going to increase collaboration, communication between them to make us more effective in the way that we support caregivers, in the way that we get research done, in the way that we elevate quality of care, and overall, in the way that we take care of people with Alzheimer's and other dementia, and take care of the families that take care of them, too.
And this matter seems a continuation of Governor Martinez's efforts to help those dealing with Alzheimer's. The last legislative session saw the institution of silver alert notifications, used to put out a bulletin when an adult with a form of dementia goes missing. Can you speak to that?
Definitely. Silver alert was a real important step to supporting these folks. What it does is not only increases the chance that somebody's going to be recovered safely in the event that somebody wanders. About half the folks with Alzheimer's disease will wind up wandering over the course of their disease. And when you look at the numbers that I was throwing out before, that's a big effect on the population. But it also gives peace of mind to their caregivers. And Alzheimer's caregivers, 6 out of 10 report that their stress from caregiving is high or very high. A third of them report symptoms of depression. They're under an awful lot of stress. And this is one less thing for them to worry about. They know that in the event that their loved one does wander, community resources, including the general public, because of the media response to a silver alert, are going to be activated in helping to recover their vulnerable loved ones. So that was a very important step. And this is a comprehensive approach that builds on that. It's going to make sure that our caregivers get evidence-based training. Here in the state of New Mexico, the Alzheimer's Association does a great job of offering this class called Savvy Caregiver that trains Alzheimer's caregivers and caregivers of other dementia in a way that reduces their stress from a proven research standpoint while increasing the quality of care that gets delivered to their loved one, too. Our Aging and Disability Resource Center here through the Aging and Long-Term Services Department, they do a great job with supporting folks and making sure that they get the resources they need to be successful in their caregiving, too. So it's connecting a variety of partners in that same kind of effort as Silver Alert. So we're going to be taking a more comprehensive approach that kind of builds on what Silver Alert was doing.
And the new emphasis on caregivers, is it a matter of making them aware of elder care facilities or other means of providing them with some respite from the demands of care they themselves shoulder?
It is exactly all of that stuff. So what we heard from caregivers through this process, and what you hear when you talk to Alzheimer's caregivers, is that they don't know what to do next too often. And we've got a lot of folks who are doing great work for caregivers, but we need to get them plugged in, the caregivers, to those resources and make sure that once they make it in, those resources are sufficiently connected with other resources so that the caregivers don't wind up at some point wondering what they do next, that they're passed from one thing to another in a seamless way so that they're supported throughout the course of the disease. You mentioned respite, and that is a real important thing. A lot of our senior centers offer respite. There's some great nonprofits throughout New Mexico that provide respite services, and your home health agencies. There are a lot of different ways that folks can get that break, can get that help that they need. And making sure that once a caregiver, first of all, receives the diagnosis, and that's something that we've identified, we've got to make our providers better at being able to give those diagnoses, and then making sure that our providers are able to point caregivers in the right direction so that once they know that there's something going on with their loved one, they send them again to that Aging and Disability Resource Center, would be a great point of entry, and you can get a hold of that, 1-800-432-2080, 1-800-432-2080, and once they make their way into that system through their provider or whatever the entry point is, that they are able to utilize all of these supports that are available to them in a way that improves the caregiver's quality of life and quality of life for their loved one, too.
And of this new outreach and the new post that's being created, is it something that now hits the ground running, or will it take some time to be implemented?
Well, there's no one in that position yet. There will be by the end of FY14, and we are making sure that all of these folks who became connected through the process of this task force, so people like the Alzheimer's Association, like the Department of Indian Affairs, like Los Alamos National Lab, like UNM, Department of Public Safety, Department of Health, and of course the Aging and Long-Term Services Department, that they all stay engaged around this issue in a way that winds up producing the results that we need to see for our families that are dealing with Alzheimer's disease and other dementia.
Anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with on this subject?
If you are somebody who is dealing with Alzheimer's disease or other dementia, please get help with this. You do a tremendous service for society at large. Alzheimer's identified as the most expensive disease in America, and you deserve to be supported because without you, those costs fall much more directly on government systems and on healthcare systems. And you deserve this kind of help, not only for yourself so that you can continue to give care, but also for your loved ones. So please get help. Give us a call right now, the Aging and Disability Resource Center, 1-800-432-2080. Again, I really appreciate your time on this.
Well, and thank you, Miles Copeland, Department Secretary of Aging and Long-Term Services, for joining us here at KSFR to talk about this issue today. And at noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Programming on KSFR is underwritten in part by Medlin Mechanical, a full-service plumbing company specializing in green energy solutions for homes and business in the Santa Fe area for over 5 years. Medlin Mechanical's geothermal and solar systems are designed to cut energy costs and reduce carbon footprint. And tax credits for new systems are available through 2016. To learn more, visit medlamechanical.com or call 577-8087. That's 577-8087.
12:21 as At Noon on KSFR continues. It was just 2 months ago when the state's Human Services Department learned of possible Medicaid billing fraud and other improprieties by 15 in-state providers of mental health and substance abuse services. That set in motion a mandated stop-pay action during investigation. The matter is still being scrutinized, but some changes have taken place in the interim. Joining us now is Matt Kennicott, Director of External Affairs for the New Mexico Human Services Department. Matt, can you bring us up to date on what's transpired in the past few weeks?
Sure. The Attorney General continues their investigation into all 15 of the agencies that were subject to the audit. At this point, we've either partially or fully released pay holds to three of the agencies here in New Mexico. We're currently reviewing two others. There are some technical issues where we believe it might warrant the lift of those pay holds to these two additional agencies. And I think right now we're either in process or have completed 12 transitions to new management within these agencies. So things are rolling along. Services continue in an uninterrupted manner to consumers, and our clinician relationships are continuing, and things are moving along pretty smoothly.
And of those new companies from Arizona that have been brought in to provide services, it's not that the providers under scrutiny have been banned from continuing services, yes, but simply they will not as long as their payments are withheld during the investigation. Will you speak to that?
So the reason we're bringing these Arizona companies in is when we have a current provider that says we can no longer provide these services, we need to have somebody there to step in and fill a gap. So we've brought in five additional agencies, and those agencies have many years of experience. They've completed something like 15 similar transitions out of state, and they're top rated agencies within Arizona. And we have them here. They have cultural competency. They've dealt with similar populations in Arizona, and they're quite frankly excellent agencies, and will provide great services to the citizens of the state.
And your department just met this week with the Legislative Finance Committee at a gathering held in Chama. We heard that there was some balking by the LFC regarding the amount of money you're seeking to shift within the Human Services Department's budget. Yes.
Yeah, we initially requested a BAR, or budget authorization request, in the amount of about $17 million. LFC subsequently came back to us and said, resubmit this, we'll give you $7 now, and we can talk about the 10.3 or 10.5 later. The hearing was to talk about that additional $10 million. They're saying it's premature and not needed, but really what that money is for is to continue the continuity of care between consumers and clinicians. And we need those funds in order to continue that continuity of care in the services.
Matt, we've heard reports of care recipients claiming that the services to them have been interrupted. How large a problem is that at this time?
Really, everyone's needs are being addressed at this time. The transitional agencies have hired back something like 88% of all of the staff from the previous agencies. So the consumer-clinician relationship continues. If we suspect that there could be any bumps in the road in services, we act immediately. We've got some pretty robust plans in place to ensure that the doors are open and the lights are still on and people are still receiving the services that they were prior to the audit. So really, for the most part, those are not necessarily real issues at this point.
After the investigations are completed, will the companies that have been under scrutiny be allowed to perform services here in the future, or are the Arizona replacements now permanent placements?
It's entirely possible that a company that's under investigation right now could come back into the system at some point. Keep in mind, the audit did discover $36 million in overpayments. So each one of those companies does need to meet that obligation and repay those overpayments that are due. As far as the Arizona companies go, we have temporary contracts with them. If they stay long term in the state, that's completely up to how the Medicaid system works in the state. We have new providers coming in and out of the system in physical health or and behavioral health nearly on a daily basis. So it's up to it's really up to our larger MCOs to determine if they want to keep the Arizona providers here or not.
And when the Affordable Care Act is fully implemented here in New Mexico, will Optum Health remain the umbrella organization in charge of providers for mental health and substance abuse services?
No, the way we've structured the new Medicaid program is that we now have four MCOs that have to roll all of the services together. So we moved from seven MCOs, which included Optum, to four. Optum, I believe, now will become part of United Health Group. And they'll be one of four behavioral health overseers.
Matt Kennicott, Director of External Affairs for the New Mexico Human Services Department. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will be back in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Pueblo of Tesuque Flea Market, the flea for over 20 years, hosting local and international vendors dealing in everything from handcrafted imports and old pawn jewelry to specialty foods and garage sale finds. Located at 15 Flea Market Road in Santa Fe, right next to the Opera, the Tesuque Flea is open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from March through December. For more info, email seetheflea@yahoo.com or visit online at tesuquefleamarket.com.
12:27 here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. Underway today through Sunday at the Hyatt Regency Tamaya Resort in Albuquerque is a conference of the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials Educational Fund. It's also known as NALEO. The banner for the gathering is the changing dynamics of the Latino 50-plus population. Mary Jane Parks is an assistant to Public Regulation Commission Vice Chair Valerie Espinoza, who is one of our state's officials in attendance. Parks describes the conference's overall objective.
The NALEO Policy Institute will address changing demographics that are projected to take place in the aging population. Apparently, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the population group age 55 to 64 will grow by more than 70% from 1990 to the year 2020. And the NALEO Policy Institute will address changes in that demographic group, including retirement issues, Social Security, private savings accounts, and other issues, particularly among low-income households. So the Policy Institute this weekend has invited 50 elected officials from across the country, including Commissioner Valerie Espinoza, who was given a scholarship to attend, and they will be looking at these issues. Participants will be exposed to recent state legislative actions across the country and key provisions of the Affordable Care Act that can help reduce health disparities in the Latino 50 and over population, and as well as other underserved populations in the country.
The NALEO conference continues through Sunday in Albuquerque.
Southwest Pickers presents the 39th Annual Santa Fe Bluegrass and Old Time Music Festival at the County Fairgrounds on Rodeo Road. The festival begins Friday, August 23rd at 6 and runs through Sunday the 25th. In addition to 12 regional and local bands, outstanding national acts including two-time International Bluegrass Music Association Female Vocalist of the Year, Claire Lynch and the Claire Lynch Band, and old-time music greats Foghorn String Band will perform. There will be individual instrument and band contests, workshops, plenty of parking lot picking, as well as music and food vendors. For schedule and tickets, visit southwestpickersfestival.org. The Santa Fe Bluegrass and Old Time Music Festival is sponsored in part by New Mexico Arts, the National Endowment for the Arts, the New Mexico Folk Music and Dance Society, Apple Mountain Music, the State Employees Credit Union, and others. A message from the tax-exempt Southwest Traditional and Bluegrass Music Association.
12:30 now in the KSFR newsroom. Here, exactly at the bottom of the hour, is the best time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
This is going to sound strange, but for much of my life, a fantasy of mine has been to be a member of an outlaw motorcycle gang as defined by the FBI. It would be like being on the cast of Sons of Anarchy, or like being Marlon Brando in the classic movie The Wild One. I mean, how exciting. Ride your motorcycle really fast, have a pretty woman hanging on to you, thumbing your nose at the cops and being able to kill people with your body odor alone. Recently, ABQ police were put on notice that the outlaw motorcycle gangs, the Bandidos and the Vagos, might be looking for a place to shoot off their mouths and their guns. And Albuquerque might be the playground. Now, I don't know what the differences were about, but I think what they should do... Everybody get together, try to love one another right now. Come on, outlaw motorcycle gangs. Why can't you play nice? For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Tomorrow brings weekend edition, and then on Monday we'll start fresh with more news of and for New Mexico for you. And as always, we hope you join us.